The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Carrie Lawson from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. We are in the relationship section of Oprah Daily. Article is, Are You Stuck in a Regret Spiral? Learn to stop spinning and make peace with an experience that haunts you. Into every life, a little remorse must fall. Pangs over the road not taken, ennui about the one who got away. Who wouldn't occasionally wonder what might have been? But when you can't stop rehashing a painful or shameful experience and it's distracting you from your day-to-day, you're doing what's known as regret spiraling. Quote, regret is about disappointment. We want to make a different choice than we did, but we can't time travel. End quote. Says Ali Mattu, Ph.D., a clinical psychologist in New York City and host of The Psych Show. Quote, it's the mind's way of instilling self-punishment, end quote. At what point does garden variety regret become something more pathological? It tends to be a you-know-it-when-you-see-it situation, occasionally thinking about the job offer you wish you'd accepted or the fight that fractured your friendship is normal and healthy. Pining over that job every time you sit down at your desk or sobbing about that lost friend for hours? Not so much. If you're constantly dredging up feelings that leave you depressed or deeply ashamed, consider seeing a therapist to help you break free from the pattern. But if, like most people, you sometimes find yourself ruminating over words or actions you regret, take heart. We asked psychologists to share their best methods for closing the loop and moving on in your life. Say it out loud. Our biggest regrets are often things we don't share with anyone else and hate to even admit to ourselves. Simply saying, quote, I regret doing that, end quote, and acknowledging that there may not be anything you can do about a situation can be helpful. Quote, shame and regret grow best in silence, end quote, Mattu says. Quote, find someone with whom you can share some of your shame, some of your regret. In some cases, just sharing your feelings is enough to heal them. In others, talking about it will help you feel less alone and perhaps give you ideas about how to move forward. End quote. Change the channel. Quote, you can no more control your thoughts than you can control the weather, end quote, Mattu says. So trying to suppress them is fruitless. The trick is to find a balance between giving these thoughts some attention but not too much attention. To do that, think up a distraction you can use to disrupt a ruminating frame of mind. Maybe that's watching your favorite TV show, going for a walk, or calling a friend. Quote, anything that will get your attention out of yourself and into real life, end quote, Mattu says. Find a silver lining. The maddening thing about most regrets is that they're frozen in time. The ship has sailed. The die is cast. The words can't be unsaid. But that's not always the case. For a little peace of mind, you can call up that friend you hurt and apologize. Or re-apologize. Letting them know that your mistake still bothers you. And yes, that job may be long gone, but the fact that you turned it down can still be useful since your remorse made you realize what kind of job you truly want. To take this idea farther, make a pros and cons list, writing down reasons why the event or action was negative, and then counter it with reasons why it could be beneficial to your growth, says Willow Jenkins, MD, Medical Director of Emergency and Consultation Liaison Psychiatry at Rady Children's Hospital, San Diego. Research shows that regrets often hurt our egos, make us feel less than. But when we can find some benefit to their occurrence, it can help restore some of our belief in ourselves and our abilities to make good decisions. Forgive yourself. Quote, the difference between regretting, spiraling, and other types of spiraling is practicing forgiveness, end quote, says Aisha Shabazz, a licensed clinical social worker and anxiety expert. Quote, if we can forgive ourselves for harm we did, or presume we did, we can start to deal with it, end quote. This isn't always easy, and you might feel undeserving, but showing yourself compassion is essential to halting this kind of rumination. One tactic is to imagine what you might say to someone else who's done what you so deeply regret. Much easier, right? After all, says Jenkins, we often feel kinder towards others than to ourselves. End quote. From the Daily Insider section, we have Oprah asks, what will bring you peace? Quote, where can you be a balm, a comfort, a pursuer for peace in your own life or in somebody else's? End quote. Every week, Oprah is setting an intention exclusively for Oprah Daily Insiders with reflections on topics like letting go, forgiveness, coming into your own, and more. So great to hear from so many of you regarding reconnecting after the pandemic. I have to tell you, y'all made me not feel like such an anomaly anymore. Some of you actually beat my record of reclusiveness. Plevy 7, 15 months straight. Okay, you win. And Janet Scaglione stayed in for a long time and now has gone out for 3 plays in 1 week. Janet wants you to know that when I went to see The Piano Lesson this past January, I wore 2 masks throughout the whole performance. I was thinking, oh Lord, please don't let me pass out in here and have to be carried out. But here we are moving forward, reconnecting as best we can, whether it's cautiously, like so many of you shared, or full throttle. I want you all to continue to do what feels right for you. Don't be shamed or pressured to do or pretend something that's not right for you. I still prefer to wear a mask in indoor spaces where people have not been tested, and I don't want anybody trying to make me feel some kind of way bad about it. And I'm going to do the same for you, for not wearing one, not going to make you feel bad. That is your choice, and so onward we go. Yesterday, as we all know, marked a solid year of the war in Ukraine. The people there have seen and experienced the worst, and I think of them so often as I move around in my comfortable world with access to hot tubs and showers and clean clothes and a place to wash the clothes and have good meals and sleep on a real mattress. Seeing their valor, that's the word. Valor, in the face of such devastation and loss and brutality and uncertainty, has been a powerful thing to witness. They're all celebrities, in my opinion. Survivor celebrities, citizens to be celebrated and admired for their courage and their conviction to remain free. So it fosters a question of what price, what sacrifices would you be willing to make to maintain free will in our country? Nobody who cares about humanity wants to choose war, but what would you put at stake for peace? I've been thinking about that question a lot, and I don't know if we truly even know the answer until we are forced to know the answer. Meanwhile, I sent clothes, and I gave support to other people who were on the ground. I've given money, and I felt better momentarily, but knowing all the while that no help in this war or any other will ever be enough. But we do what we can. We do what we can, and we look for places where we can be the peace for somebody else. Their balm in Gilead. Think about that for a moment. Where can you be a balm, a comfort, a pursuer for peace in your own life or in somebody else's, as the Ukrainians are entering year 2 of uncertainty, sacrifice, and devastation? I think that one of our offerings to them is peace with ourselves to others. And so this week, let your intention be in every experience, every encounter with the intention be to magnify the peace. Be the peace you want to see. Go well. Moving on to the inspiration subsection of Daily Insider. Stories of the most moving gifts ever received. Celebrate the season of giving with stories of thoughtful gifts, from words of wisdom to small scraps of paper with a deep meaning. No matter the cost, a truly great gift is priceless. It lets us know we are seen, understood, loved. To celebrate the season of giving, we gathered stories of the most moving gifts ever received, from extraordinary kindnesses to everyday items made of shiny gold or humble plastic. Each came wrapped up with a memory that brings endless joy. Nature and nurture. Quote, I just ended a serious relationship and moved twice, and I was putting in 16-hour days as a mental health and addiction worker. A friend who knew I was really stressed came out to pick me up for dinner, and he brought birdseed so we could stop at a park to feed the ducks. It was exactly what I needed, to feel the fresh air and to be in that peaceful state with the animals. End quote. Amanda Elizabeth, a reader. The Book of Love. Quote, I was in my 30s when I accidentally found out I was adopted, a discovery that left me feeling somewhat angry and lost. After 6 months of searching, I found my birth mother in England and eventually flew over to meet her and my two half-sisters. As nice as all that was, there was so much I didn't know. Then one of my sisters sent me a beautiful scrapbook with a picture of four women on the cover. It was filled with photos and information about our Scottish lineage, our grandparents and uncles. Each page had a wonderfully detailed letter describing each person's personality. That priceless object was a dose of healing when I needed it most. End quote. Lorna Little, a reader. Safe and Sound. Quote, it's a gift to remember my mother's voice as she read to me when I was a child. I love to rest my head against her side and feel her voice resonating through her ribs. It seemed to me like I was putting my ear to an instrument being played. A cello, deep and soothing. End quote. Kathy Bates, actress. Turns of Endearment. Quote, many years ago, I was living in a New York City hotel that I called the Roach Palace. My spirit had been crushed by a horrible breakup, and I couldn't eat or sleep. When my neighbor and dear friend Billy was moving out, the glass knob on the door to his room came off, and he gave it to me. It was like he was handing me hope that a door might open, and eventually it did. I survived. When Billy went to L.A. to fulfill his dreams of being a comedy writer, I returned the knob to him. We've been passing that doorknob back and forth for 30 years to usher in a new job, a new baby, the publication of my novel. It's on my desk now, and when I hand it to Billy, he'll tear up the way I do each time he gives it to me. End quote. Cynthia Bond, an author. Box of Dreams. Quote, I left my home in Toronto to move to Los Angeles, where I knew no one, to pursue my dream of being an actress. My older brother was one of the only people who believed in me. When I got to California, I opened the trunk of my car and found a, quote, vision box, end quote, he'd created for me, with almost 100 laminated photos of all my heroes and books that inspired me, plus an image he'd made of my name on a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. There were even pictures of puppies because I longed to have a dog one day. When I feel like giving up, that box reminds me of all the great people and things awaiting me on my journey. End quote. Natasha Kaja, spelled K-H-A-W-J-A, a reader. More Than a Scrap. Quote, I still have a scrap of paper given to me by Vincent Harding, a speechwriter for Martin Luther King, Jr. I was a young woman wrestling with questions about my future. Could I be both a spiritual seeker and a social activist? Harding wrote down these words attributed to the educator and theologian Howard Thurman. Quote, don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and then go do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. End quote. Elizabeth Lesser, co-founder of the Omega Institute. A Wholly New Perspective. Quote, I was recently on the phone with a dear friend, and as we were about to hang up, he said, remember, you are the loving expression of God. I almost fell down from the power of those words. Me, the loving expression of God. I've been carrying that awareness with me daily, a most beautiful gift. End quote. Imbolo Mabu, an author. A Real Gem. Quote, I was out of work, facing foreclosure and feeling worthless. To get my mind off things, a friend took me to a music festival where we stopped at a jewelry booth. I commented on a gorgeous necklace, and the salesman said he'd love to sell it to me. I told him I'd love to buy it. But I was about to be homeless. Half an hour later, I felt a tap on my shoulder. The man from the booth pressed the necklace into my hand and said, quote, I hope things get better soon. End quote. I realized then that there is still great kindness in the world, and I do matter. After that, everything fell into place. I had the courage to call about a job, and I was hired. I found a program that would pay my mortgage for 18 months. One single act of kindness from a stranger changed my life forever. Catherine Tripp, a reader. A Friendly Reminder. Quote, some time ago, I lived as a Buddhist monk in a forest monastery in Thailand, where I learned from the master Ajahn Chah, a man of great wisdom who was very demanding. We'd walk for miles in freezing weather to collect alms for food, then sit meditating all night. I would be shivering, achy, exhausted. But one morning, at 4 o'clock, at the very coldest moment, Cha smiled and winked at me and said, quote, "You could do it," end quote. And I knew then that I could, end quote. Jack Kornfield, co-founder of the Insight Meditation Society. What Santa Forgot. Quote, "I always wanted an easy bake oven, but Santa never delivered one. When I was 34, my sister bought me one for Christmas. And yes, I made a cake," end quote. Suzanne Toscani, a reader. The Joy of Sisterhood. Quote, "On my 19th birthday, my best friend and roommate, Sarah, gave me a copy of The Joy of Cooking. I'd moved away from home at age 16 and had been living with Sarah for a couple of years. She'd saved up tips from her restaurant job to pay for the book. It inspired the start of my love of cooking and was a true mark of independence. I'm still moved each time I read the inscription on the inside cover. Quote, "You're like a sister to me. XO, Sarah," end quote. Jillian McLeod, a reader. Golden Gift. Quote, "A close friend and mentor once told me, indecision is a decision, a bad one. That gift became a golden rule in my life," end quote. Peter Walsh, organization expert. Fancy Free. Quote, "When I was in my early 20s, I was working to put myself through college, and I was always broke. My sister Penny, in similar financial purgatory, spent the months before Christmas collecting department store samples of perfumes I could never afford. Chanel No. 5, Shalimar, Joy. Each little vial was wrapped in a colored tissue, and they filled an entire shoebox. She gave me a year's worth of feeling pretty and put together, and I was so moved that she understood how deeply I wanted those things, all without my ever asking," end quote. Paula McLean, an author. Grace Over Grudges. "The summer I turned 16, my father gave me his refurbished 69 Chevy Malibu convertible. Cherry red, chrome accents, V8 engine, a gift wasted on me at that age. What did I know about classic cars? The important thing was that Hannah and I could drive around Tucson with the top down. Hannah was my best friend, a year younger, but much taller, about 5 feet 10 inches. Quote, "Hannah's a knockout," end quote, my mother always said, and sure enough, that summer she signed with a modeling agency. She was already doing catalog work and some runway. A month after my birthday, Hannah and I went to the movies. On the way home, we stopped at a drive-thru, putting the fries on the seat between us to share. Quote, "Let's ride around a while," end quote, I said. It was a clear night, oven warm, full moon slung low over the desert. Taking a curve too fast, I hit a patch of dirt and fishtailed. What happened next is hazy. I plowed through a neighbor's landscape wall and drove into a full-grown palm. The front wheels came to rest halfway up the tree trunk. French fries on the floor, the dash, and my lap. An impossible amount of blood on Hannah's face, flaps of skin hanging onto her eyes. They took us in separate ambulances. In the ER, my parents spoke quietly. Best plastic surgeon in the city. End of her modeling career. We'd been wearing lap belts, but the car didn't have shoulder harnesses. I'd cracked my cheekbone on the steering wheel. Hannah's forehead had split wide open on the dash. What would I say to her? When her mother, Sharon, came into my room, I started to cry, bracing myself for her anger. "I deserve it," I thought. She sat beside me and took my hand. Quote, "I rear-ended my best friend when I was your age," end quote, she said. Quote, "I totaled her car and mine," end quote. Quote, "I am so sorry," quote, was all I could get out. Quote, "You're both alive," end quote, she said. Quote, "The rest is window dressing," end quote. I started to protest and she stopped me. Quote, "I forgive you. Hannah will too," end quote. Hannah's stitches looked like an intricate road map tattooed on her forehead. She never modeled again. But Sharon's forgiveness allowed Hannah and me to get back in the car together that summer, to stay friends throughout high school and college, to be in each other's weddings, and to watch my four teenagers fawn over her three younger children. I think of her gift of forgiveness every time I'm tempted to resent someone for a perceived wrong. And whenever I see Hannah, the scars are so faded no one else would notice. But in the sunlight, I can still see the faint shimmer just below her hairline. For me, after all these years, an imprint of grace. Jamie Quarto, an author. Still in Inspirations, this article is entitled, Seven Insanely Nice Things You Can Say to Anybody. These tiny but enormously kind things to say can spread a little grace during the busy holiday season. The holiday season is here, and when it comes, festive gatherings with friends and family. Arm yourself with conversation ideas that spread a joy and kindness so you're prepared for any social situation that comes your way. Number one, quote, take your time, I'm not in a rush, end quote. This one is great for the grocery store, the takeout burrito restaurant, or anywhere else that involves really tired people trying their best even as they fumble and flail. For example, the woman in front of you pays the cashier but then has to rifle through her overstuffed wallet to put away the change, then store the receipt, then mash the whole fat leather money accordion into her purse. She will usually complete this action with frantic fingers because she knows she's delaying the whole line. She knows everybody just wants to go home, and she knows she should not save old, mostly used-up gift cards with 63 cents on them. Telling her, quote, take your time, I'm not in a rush, end quote, always sets off the same reaction. First, surprise. Really? Because everybody's in a rush. And then a flash of sweet, wide-open relief. You have just given somebody a 3-minute holiday, not from the stress of life, but the stress we put on ourselves. Number two, quote, I just can't make this decision without you, end quote. Everybody likes to be liked for who they are, but there's a special kind of glow that comes when somebody likes what you think and openly asks for your help in making a decision or in figuring out a messy problem. This may also be another way of expressing that most honored of human emotions, trust. Number three, quote, you bring me joy, you make me happy, end quote. There's ticker tape in most of our brains that spits out these kinds of loving phrases at regular intervals throughout the day. But the phrases themselves don't make it to our mouths because they seem cheesy or we don't know the person well enough or we were raised by people who shook our hands when they really wanted to hug us. Interestingly enough, people don't Twitter nervously when you say these so-called, quote, overused, quote, things to them. Nor do they run away. They may smile wildly or just slightly, but inside, little Roman candles of happiness are going off. Just say it. And if that's too goofy or embarrassing, text it. Number four, quote, that's awful, end quote. Sometimes the nicest thing you can do is not to ask a bunch of probing, sensitive questions. Quote, so what are you really feeling? Shock? Terror? End quote. Or try to think of a way you can fix it. Quote, have you looked into natural herbs? Have you called those clinics in Bora Bora? End quote. Or to offer help. Quote, I'll drive you. I'll clean your house. I'll make you a lasagna. End quote. Or even to apologize over and over, explaining that you know you didn't make the horrible event happen, you're just sorry it happened. Sometimes you need to take you out of it. A person in your life is upset and scared and maybe even in denial. Recognizing what's really happening gives that person the rare and much-needed opportunity to look at this terrible thing with somebody instead of alone. Number five, quote, you have a genius not understood by mere mortals, end quote. This was probably said to Einstein, but you can say it to anybody in those moments. Say, when you catch your new boyfriend in the shower with his yoga mat. Or you go over to your best friend's house and find her layering her sandwich like this. Ham, cheese, lettuce, onion. Ham, cheese, lettuce, onion. Ham, cheese, lettuce, onion. We all have those quirky rituals. They're a little bit screwball. We usually do them alone. But they save time. For example, rinsing off a yoga mat while you rinse yourself, or just work better, for example, making 12 individual layers of sandwich filling ensures that you'll get a little taste of all the flavors in each bite. Understanding the reasoning behind these private processes and praising the person for them is a moment of respect. You're not saying that you're going to do it at your house, which would be a lie, but you are saying that their idea makes sense, right in the moment they most expect it to be ridiculed for being a complete kook. Number 6, quote, I am not inviting him to my birthday party, end quote. Everybody wants to feel protected, especially when they've been dumped. Offering to full-on hate somebody's ex certainly lets her know that you're on her side. But hate is exhausting. It sucks a lot of energy. Plus, it doesn't make rational sense if you've never even met the ex. Instead, follow the kind of loyal, immature path of kindergartners everywhere and declare the offender crossed off your birthday list. It will not only make the injured party laugh, but also create the pleasing fantasy of her drinking champagne and dancing on a table while the dumper sits home in front of the TV, crying over a carton of cold, limp egg foo young. Number 7. I saw what you did, and it restored my faith in the human race. End quote. Oh, the things people do. The woman who climbs up 2 flights of stairs at the airport, then climbs back down to help an old man with his suitcase. The guy who picks up the public trash can on the counter that fell over. Everybody walking by notices these tiny kindnesses. So few people take the socially risky, even embarrassing step of approaching the complete stranger and thanking them for what they're really doing, helping us remember that, despite the constant headlines, human beings don't just invent Ponzi schemes and burn up the ozone layer. They also offer to share their umbrellas with strangers during pouring thunderstorms, even if it means their backpack might get a little wet. Moving to the books section, we have an article titled An Unexpected Cure for Loneliness and Grief. The author of the 100th Oprah's Book Club pick, Hello Beautiful, reflects on how she recovered from the death of her father. I wrote Hello Beautiful more quickly than I've ever written anything in my life. I know this is because of when I started writing. It was April 2020. New York City was shut down because of the pandemic, and my father had just died. I was with my husband and 2 sons in our small Brooklyn apartment instead of where my heart really wanted to be, at my father's side during the final days of his life. There was no physical gathering when he died, either. My siblings and I could only lean toward our computer screens while we Zoomed with our mother, trying to make her feel like we were in the same room. I'm always grateful to be a writer, but never so much as in that moment. Unable to erase my own grief, unable to fix the hole left in my family, unable to assure my children that life would go back to normal, I sat down at my computer and started to build a new world. I walked into the story beside William Waters, each of us lonely and broken to different degrees, and we were both drawn to the noisy, fierce love of the Padovano family. The 4 strong-willed, inseparable sisters lit up whatever room they were in with their energy and ambitions. William needed these women in a way he didn't fully understand, and I felt the same way. There's a scene early in the book when the 4 sisters lie together in a small bed with their limbs intertwined, and I was surprised to find that this moment alleviated some of my own loneliness. This had never happened to me while writing before. The story I was creating seemed to be matching the contours of my emotions. It was offering me not only solace, but relief. I missed my father, and so it made sense that I enjoyed writing about the girl's father, a lovely man named Charlie, whose only real similarity to my dad was that he adored his family. My father was a brusque lawyer who coached my childhood soccer teams. Charlie was an alcoholic who loved poetry. I was as shocked as the characters in the book, though, when Charlie died. But then I shook my head and thought, of course. I was mourning my own father on the page, but this time I was allowed inside the funeral home. I was able to shake hand after hand and feel the love and grief of the people who had loved this man. I was able to sit in the pews of St. Procopius with his daughters, Sylvie and Julia, uncomfortable like them, in thick tights and a somber dress. Writing these scenes was moving and satisfying. Grieving a different father soothed some of my own grief, and so I stumbled forward, trying to create more of the emotional terrain I wished I was standing on in real life. There's a scene in which Sylvie Padovano talks to William about her father's death, and she says, quote, I didn't expect for it to be a part of everything, every minute. I didn't know that you could lose someone, and that meant you lost so much else, end quote. This dialogue echoes inside me even now. I was surprised, too, that I lost my father, and then found that I lost so much else. I wonder if this happened to everyone who lost a loved one during the spring of 2020, when the pandemic moved into a new phase, one that included masks, vaccines. My family was finally able to come together, but we found it unexpectedly different. Where the terrain between us used to be level, there were now potholes and crooked sidewalks that took us past each other instead of into one another's arms. We were all surprised and upset. This felt like compounded loss, but upon reflection, I think it makes sense. How could everything not be different? The last time we'd gathered, my father was alive, and there was no public health emergency. Everything, including ourselves, had changed. I didn't have the power to reshape my family's experience, but I could devote myself to doing justice to the mother, father, and sisters in Hello Beautiful. This family felt important to me as my own, and in honor of both, I wanted to tell the story of the Padovano family as honestly and deeply as possible. I needed to try to save the broken little boy that was William Waters. I needed to see if it was possible for sisters to reunite after personal choices drove them apart. For 2 years, I lived in the Padovanos' world. I inhabited their house in Chicago. I gardened with their mother in the backyard. I bridged the sisters' personal heartbreaks. Inside the book, I was able to be with the family that wasn't my own family in a way that felt true. I vibrated with the same question every time I sat down to write. Is everything going to be okay? We're going to visit the work and money section now. First article is How to Save Money on Date Night. We swear not everything is getting more expensive. On the one hand, everyone wants to get out of the house. On the other, babysitters cost real money. That's why we looked into which prices didn't increase as much as others and which are lower depending on when you buy, which isn't always what you'd expect. Here are a few ways to save. Go to the movies. The numbers report that since 2020, the average price of a movie ticket has not increased 1 cent. It's $9.17. Next, if you want to go to a concert, and it's not Taylor Swift, wait to buy your tickets. Finance Buzz reports that you'll spend 33% less than the average concert goer if you buy your tickets the day of a concert. You'll spend 27% less if you buy them the day before. Next, take this as a reason to eat out. Between November 2021 and November 2022, the Consumer Price Index showed that the cost of, quote, food at home, end quote, increased 12%, and the cost of, quote, food away from home, end quote, increased 8.5%. Next, even better, go to bar and not a restaurant. The CPI showed that the price of alcoholic beverages increased 3% less than, quote, food away from home, end quote, and 6.5% less than, quote, food at home, end quote. Next, at the bar or at home, get Australian wine. The Wine and Spirits Wholesalers Association told us that because China slapped huge tariffs on Australian wine in 2021, there's now a glut of Australian vintages on the market. And lastly, whatever you do, do it close to home. The CPI shows that gasoline prices are still about 10% higher than they were last year. Another article from Work and Money. The specific fear that keeps women from long-term financial wellness and how to overcome it. American women know a lot. For instance, they know that on average they live 7 years longer than American men. Most of them want to invest, so those years, and all the ones leading up to them, will be financially secure ones. Many of them know the current American economic system is rigged against us. Let financial feminist author Tori Dunlap count the ways. On average, in the U.S., women still earn only 83 cents for every dollar a man makes. No, it's not just because of that often coughed-up excuse that women choose lower-paying professions, such as teaching and retail. On average, female CEOs earn only 75.6 cents for every dollar that male counterparts make. We know it wouldn't be as bad that we earn less if we had to spend less, but the, quote, pink tax, end quote, means it flat out costs more to be an American woman than an American man. Why pay more for everything from razors to haircuts to dry cleaning? Women's blouses and dresses cost more to clean than men's shirts and suits. To the price of homes, men are conditioned to drive harder bargains. To mortgages, No one knows why. Toys marketed to girls even cost more than toys marketed to boys. Another mystery. And 27 states tax menstrual products as, quote, luxury goods, end quote. Given the numbers on male leadership and in many states, state houses, maybe less of a mystery. Despite all that, American women somehow manage to have less credit card debt than American men. The problem is we pay more for it. Why? Women are more likely to carry balances and more likely to only pay the minimum amount due. Why? See wage and expense gaps above. That's why most of us know what the need to invest is. Saving is not enough, Dunlap stresses. The return on even a high-yield savings account doesn't come close to keeping up with inflation. Parking your money in one actually costs you money. The stock market, on the other hand, averages nearly a 7% annual return adjusted for inflation. Dunlap says that women tend to start investing in the market later than men. This makes sense. They earn less, so they need more of their income to live on. But that's not the only reason for the delay, she says. It's likely not the main one keeping them from investing even a few dollars every month. Quote, the biggest thing I see holding women back from investing is a fear of making a mistake, end quote, Dunlap says. Quote, women feel like they need to know everything about the stock market, or be able to pick the perfect investment portfolio, or choose the best investment platform, end quote. But how often in life are we perfect? The truth is, women just need to get started because the only wrong decision when it comes to investing is not doing it at all, says Dunlap. If you share this fear, not so much that the markets will fluctuate, but that you don't know enough, consider this. Women are better investors than men. On average, we make higher returns. Why? Men react more emotionally, pulling out their money when the market dips. They also check their portfolios compulsively and make trades impulsively. Women, on the other hand, are the strong, steady types. Dunlap recommends keeping it simple. Open a 401k or an IRA. Choose a risk level you're comfortable with. Automate a monthly contribution, and voila, you are done with that. If you want and can do more investing, don't bother trying to pick individual stocks. Choose a low-cost index fund, mutual fund, or EFT. Quote, you work hard for your money. You want your money to work hard for you, end quote, Dunlap says. Quote, for years, even decades, end quote. There's one more thing Dunlap says you can do for women's long-term financial wellness. Quote, demand that our society better supports women, end quote. She advocates for paid family leave, health care that is not tied to jobs, a minimum wage that can actually support a family, and equal pay for equal work. In the meantime, she says, keep investing, even if imperfectly. Now moving to the intentions section of the Oprah Daily. This article is Oprah on her mission to demystify menopause. Quote, I am so pleased to be announcing that Oprah Daily is going to be a source of an extensive curriculum to help you fill your toolbox so you can navigate perimenopause and menopause equipped with greater insight, end quote. Every week, Oprah is setting an intention exclusively for Oprah Daily Insiders with reflections on topics like letting go, forgiveness, coming into your own, and more. Hi, Insiders. Today, I want to talk about something that I know so many of you have already been through. It's going to affect every single woman on the planet, if you live long enough, get it shrouded in stigma and even some shame. I can't believe it, but it is. I'm talking about the big M, menopause. For generations, women have suffered through this natural and confusing part of life in silence, with neither the resources to be prepared nor a way to speak about it candidly. So we at Oprah Daily want to be a force in the movement which is flipping the script on the big M. I'll tell you that when I was going through it, I thought I was going to die. I really thought I was going to die every night. My journal was filled with, quote, wow, I made it through another night, end quote. Because I had such severe heart palpitations, I went to 5 different doctors. Nobody knew what was going on. No woman should feel alone and invisible in this journey, and that is why I'm so pleased to be announcing that Oprah Daily is going to be a source of an extensive curriculum to help you fill your toolbox so you can navigate perimenopause and menopause equipped with greater insight. First up on April 5th at 4 p.m. Eastern, join me, Maria Shriver, Drew Barrymore, along with menopause experts Dr. Sharon Malone, Dr. Heather Hirsch, Dr. Judith Joseph, plus an audience of insiders like yourself, for a very special Quote the Life You Want Quote class in partnership with the Maria Shriver Sunday Paper. There was no topic that was off limits, and I promise you, no matter where you are on your menopause journey, you will find it eye-opening. And that's not where the conversation ends. We're also launching an entire menopause guide on Oprah Daily, where you'll be able to find articles on everything from the impact of waning estrogen levels on your brain, on your heart, on your bones, to managing and surviving symptoms, to shifts in your sex life and skin texture changes. This has been a huge undertaking for us, and I'm thrilled and relieved to get this information out into the world to you all because we need it. We're going to give you a roadmap and put you in the driver's seat to take on this transition feeling empowered. Have a beautiful week ahead, and I'll see you this Wednesday, April 5th. Back in Work and Money, reading an article entitled Adventures in Empowerment. In a male-dominated field, these two women, both working for NASA, have found ways to help each other soar. For Susan Martinez, 24, it wasn't enough to merely work as an operations control engineer for the International Space Station, supporting the astronauts from the Payload Operations and Integration Center at NASA Marshall Space Flight Center. She wanted to also encourage other women to get into STEM, S-T-E-M. So she started an Instagram account at ADASTRASU to engage with followers about her career. That's when she came across at Your Female Engineer, an already popular account with the same goal run by Joan Melendez Meisner, 30, a NASA engineer and part-time science communicator. She sent a direct message, and Melendez Meisner was quick to virtually show her the ropes. They began texting, calling each other, and their initially surface-level connection grew into the juggernaut of support that it is today. Quote, "That is the beauty of social media," end quote, says Martinez. Quote, "You can change someone's life without having met them in person," end quote. Here's how it all unfolded, with lessons we can learn from their mentorship, too. Susan says, "When I first started my account, I knew I wanted it to be STEM-focused, but I didn't want to pigeonhole myself. I talked extensively with Joan about ways I could incorporate nail art, fashion, makeup, and other things that interest me. She helped me with my self-confidence and made sure I knew it was okay to be myself, especially at work." Joan says, "As someone who has been in the industry for almost 10 years, it is easy to lose yourself trying to fit in. When I first started, I would wear polo shirts like my male colleagues. I would not express my thoughts in meetings. Now I'm a lead engineer and have found my confidence, both professionally and personally. I share a lot of my struggles and success on social media because I want other people to relate to it." Susie is more than an engineer. She loves fashion. I told her to embrace this. We are all unique in STEM, and that makes you stand out in the crowd. I focus on STEM, space and motivation for STEM careers. Susie could easily focus on STEM and fashion and run with it because not many people have that niche. She is more than just a, quote, woman in STEM, end quote, and that's ultimately what we want to showcase. She is changing the way engineers are portrayed. Susan, "Joan helped me understand that not every post is going to be a success. Not every company will want to work with you, and not every opportunity is worth the stress. She has steered me away from many a fishy deal. I appreciate her taking the time to make sure all the people we work with are legit. I also get frustrated where post-success is concerned. A lot of social media posts I think will perform well just don't. On times you spend 30 seconds on something and it goes viral. That's the nature of the game. But Joan is always the first person to say, quote, 'Hey, I know this didn't go how you expected it to, but I liked it and I'm here to support you,' end quote." Being a woman empowering other women in a public space, it's risky business. I have friends who get bombarded with hate comments for their women in STEM content. It has been so nice to have Joan to cry and complain to when those things happen. She's a safe space and a judgmental place. Joan, "I have also come across microaggressions. In a predominantly male-dominated industry, you will sometimes hear, quote, "You're too pretty to be an engineer," end quote, or, quote, "You'll get the job. The interviewer likes you," end quote. It's very discouraging when your intelligence is secondary to your looks, which is why it's important to showcase what we go through in order to change the environment. I fundamentally believe failure is not the opposite of success. It is part of every success story. With social media, it's hard to not play the comparison game. I reminded Susie that the algorithm is unpredictable. One day I have a lot of views on a reel or video, and the other, it flops. I told her to have fun with it. We are changing lives, and that should be the overall goal. Even if we reach one little girl who now wants to pursue STEM because she watches her videos, then you have done more than any view count can offer. We are still in Work and Money. This article is Financial Wellness, 6 Ways to Prepare for a Recession. Even if your job is rock solid, you'll want to consider these strategies as the economic forecast shifts. Quote, "There's no such thing as recession-proofing your life, but you can build recession resilience," end quote, says Tori Dunlap, author of Financial Feminist, Here's How. Adjust your emergency fund. You know to have 3 months of living expenses set aside in an emergency fund and a high-yield savings account, but what a lot of us forget is to adjust it for our current living expenses. For example, the cost of living now is a lot different than it was in 2020. What cost $100 then will cost you $115.03 now. If you don't have an emergency fund, start saving now. Even if you can only sock away a little bit, set up automatic deposits from your paychecks into your savings account. Create spending plans now. Make A through D spending plans now and stick to them as your economic situation changes. Plan A equals things are normal. Plan B equals things are a little sticky, cut back on unnecessary spending, and know what those cuts will be in advance. Plan C equals things are very sticky, pare down to near essentials, again, know what that will entail. Plan D equals nuclear zombie apocalypse, take extreme measures to increase your income and decrease your spending. Be specific and list those options ahead of time. For example, let a room out in your home, or if you rent, give up your apartment or sublet it and let a room in someone else's home, or live with family or friends for a while. Stop driving and travel only via public transportation or bicycle. You'll save on gas, and if you really commit to it for 6 months or so, you can change your auto insurance coverage to the bare minimum mandated by your state. Keep an eye on your compensation. Make sure you're getting adequately compensated for the work you are doing. You can and should ask for performance-based and/or cost-of-living-based raises, even during a recession. If they can't give you a raise, can they give you something else? Tuition reimbursement for a certification that will make you more valuable? An extra week of vacation time? Earn money from your side hustle. Diversify your income. Pick up a side hustle or freelance work. Instead of watching Hulu at your house, could you babysit a night or two per week and watch your shows after the kids are in bed? If you have a hobby like needlepoint, knitting, or embroidery, could you set up an Etsy shop? Or use that extra week of vacation you negotiated to take a few more shifts of your side hustle or tackle a freelance project? Look out for yourself, even in a partnership. If you are partnered, make sure you have your own money. Financial stress is hard on relationships, and you don't want to be left without your savings. Lastly, find a 0% interest credit card. As an absolute last resort, take out a 0% interest credit card, then work like hell to pay it off before the introductory rate expires. Heading back over to the books section, this article is entitled The 4 Tips That Helped Me Write My Books. Anne Napolitano, author of the 100th Oprah's Book Club pick Hello Beautiful, shares some of her expert writing strategies. Ever dream of writing your own memoir or novel? Have you spent hours thinking about it but just can't find the time or inspiration to get your fingers on the keyboard? Or have you hit a certain page and gotten stuck over and over? Try this advice from Anne Napolitano, who used it to not just for her latest novel, Hello Beautiful, which is the 100th Oprah's Book Club selection, but the 3 previous ones, including Dear Edward. Number 1. Quantity, quantity, quantity. Write as often as you can. Even if you can only manage 5 minutes of writing a day, do that. The more stories you write and the more characters you create, the stronger you'll feel for your strengths and weaknesses will be. There's a wonderful Isaac Dinesen quote, "Write a little bit every day without hope and without despair," end quote. Number two, call out to your friend on the riverbank. Find a reader or readers who will be kind and tell you the truth about your work. No matter how talented or experienced you are, you need another pair of eyes to tell you what you're doing badly and what you're doing well. You're in the river with the work, and you need someone on the bank of the river to call out, "Head left, there's a waterfall up ahead. Slow down here," etc. Two writers I went to graduate school with, Helen Ellis and Hannah Tinti, check out their amazing books, are the first people to read anything I write. But perhaps your partner or sister or lawyer friend might be the perfect reader for you. Number three, take the easy way. Whenever I'm stuck in a story and there's a narrative problem I don't know how to solve, I hear my friend Helen ask, "What does the easiest solution look like?" This question has proved incredibly helpful to me over the years. For example, let's say you're writing about a couple that you know needs to break up, but one of them is conflict averse, and the other character's mother just showed up, and you're thinking that because this scene is complex, that means the answer needs to be complex. Two, this is a trap I often fall into, but the first step is to simply answer Helen's question, "What's the easiest solution that results in them breaking up?" Most likely, this is one of the characters saying, quote, "I don't want to be with you anymore," end quote. Now, to be clear, this might not be the right answer for your story and your characters, but it often is. And even if it's not, it's usually instructive in shaping your next step. Number four, use your magnet board. When I teach fiction writing, I always tell my students to pay attention to their obsessions. I tell them to imagine that we each have a specifically calibrated magnet board inside us, and that we have to pay attention to whatever thwacks against our board. Which articles do you find yourself reading? Which photograph do you tear out of the magazines? Which questions do you reflexively think about when you close your eyes at night? Your magnet board is calibrated differently to your partners, or best friends, or even your twin sisters. And it's imperative that you listen with intention to what thwacks against your board, because the world is noisy. We are inundated with information every hour of every day, and so it's entirely possible to go through your life without realizing which subjects, pieces of art, or stories call out to you. If you're a writer or an artist, your obsessions are critically important because they're connected to your themes. We don't have to understand why a certain story sticks to our board. In fact, we probably won't. But what we need to make sure we're listening and paying attention when it does. The writer and artist Amy Krauss Rosenthal had a lovely piece of art that said, "Pay attention to what you pay attention to." This next article from the Work and Money section is John Meacham tells Oprah President Biden's, quote, truth, end quote, can bridge the divide in America. The historian opened up to Oprah in an upcoming Super Soul episode. In her latest iteration of her new Super Soul interview series, Oprah sat down with Pulitzer Prize-winning historian John Meacham. The scholar is most well-known for his research on American presidents, including his acclaimed biographies about the lives of Andrew Jackson, Thomas Jefferson, and George H.W. Bush. The two discussed his 2018 book, The Soul of America, which also happens to be a favorite of our current POTUS, Joe Biden, according to the New York Times. Quote, "By examining America's past, Meacham offers insights into our current political climate and provides a hopeful outlook for the future," end quote, it says in a press release for the episode. And in an exclusive Oprah Daily preview, Meacham addresses a question posed by Lady O about Americans. Quote, "How, when we don't even share the same reality, can we begin to bridge the divide?" end quote. The scholar responded by even called him a, quote, "a genius," end quote, in 2019. Quote, "Well, this is something the president's thinking about every day, and I've talked to him about it," end quote, he says in the exclusive clip. Quote, "You tell the truth. You insist on the truth. You don't give in. You don't flinch. You don't coddle or appease the lie. You tell the truth, and you do it again and again and again," end quote. You can watch the rest of the video and catch the full episode on Discovery Plus, set to stream on Saturday, April 17th. The interview will also be available on, quote, Super Soul, quote, podcast beginning Wednesday, April 21st. In the style section, castor oil for hair growth doesn't actually work. A trichologist weighs in. Longing for longer, healthier locks? Hair growth is a surprisingly common concern, and there are all kinds of products out there, from vitamins to serums to oils, that promise to deliver those Rapunzel-like strands. One of the most commonly touted today is castor oil. This inexpensive and widely available oil is a type of vegetable oil that's derived from castor beans, says Audrey Coonan, a board-certified dermatologist. Quote, it is rich in ricinolenic acid, which is a nourishing, hydrating fatty acid, end quote. And though it's surging in popularity, particularly for applications like hair growth, it's an oil that's been used for millennia for numerous topical and beauty applications, says William Gonitz, FWTS certified trichologist and founder of Advanced Trichology. But is it worth picking up a bottle and applying regularly? Does it actually help stimulate hair follicles to deliver the real tangible results you're looking for? Does castor oil increase hair growth? The short and admittedly rather unsatisfactory answer, maybe. There's no evidence that castor oil applied to the scalp or hair will directly help increase hair growth, says Coonan. Rather, castor oil can indirectly assist in hair growth, says Gonitz. Quote, it has many anti-inflammatory properties, including high levels of omega-6 and 9s and vitamin E, end quote, he explains. Because of this regular use, particularly alongside other proven products available through a dermatologist or trichologist, can yield positive hair growth results, says Gonitz. But it shouldn't be relied upon in every case. While castor oil can be very helpful in assisting in hair regrowth for people dealing with inflammatory hair loss, it will have very little to no impact on severe male or female pattern hair loss and nutritional hair loss, he explains. How often should you apply castor oil? If you fall into the former category or simply want to use the oil to recap the benefits of improved scalp health and silkier, healthier looking hair, apply the oil 2 or 3 times per week, says Gonitz. In some severe cases, you can use castor oil daily, but you should mix with 50% coconut oil since the product can create sticky buildup, he adds. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Carrie Lawson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, northcarolinareadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.